Good afternoon and welcome. I've told you before that I talk to myself, correct? Sometimes I don't just talk to myself, I preach to myself. I find myself very stubborn and I won't listen, and so I have to get more forceful in the way I talk to myself. Well, this afternoon I'm just going to do that. This sermon is for me. This is me preaching to myself. And I think that it's a lesson that's not just for me, so I'm going to let you be in on this private conversation about sin. And I just want you to know that this is not a lesson where I'm sitting there saying, okay, so as an expert, I want to tell you all what you should do. But instead, as a frustrated spirit, I'm trying to tell myself what I ought to do. And I believe it can be beneficial to you. I want to talk about pain of sin. I have been mindful of this subject in recent days, and not just recent days, but so frequently in my life, where I have witnessed the way that sin hurts people, the great amount of pain that it has caused. And I suppose I probably don't need to remind you of this. You probably are well aware of it. But maybe we sometimes forget. Sometimes we manage to distract ourselves and not focus on it. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 9, it specifically is talking about this love of money. But it says, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. There's this path that is a sinful path. It is a path in which I'm going to go after anything that is pleasurable. I'm going to go after anything that is financially advisable. I want money, 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 money. And he says that plunges men into many harmful desires. They find that their desire leads them pain. And not just them, but others. And sin throughout time has consistently accomplished this. It has hurt us and the people around us. Sin has hurt us, and I'll go through a list. I'm not going to prove all of them. I think you can, from your own experience, know that it is true. But sin, you want to look at death and all of the pain that surrounds death. You are looking at the pain of sin. Romans 6 and verse 23, the wages of sin is death. James 1 and verse 15, when sin is conceived, it brings forth death. Death is what sin causes. In Genesis chapter 4, God speaks to Cain, and he warns him that sin is right at the door. Its desire is for you. He says in verse 7, if you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it. So what happens the next thing we see? Death. That sin, that temptation that gets him, makes him go and then kill his brother. Sin kills, and all the pain that comes around it is the result of sin. You think about Adam and Eve. How that must have made them feel. Adam and Eve, so here you have Eve staring at this one piece of fruit that she's been told, don't eat that, you'll die. And she's tempted to eat it. But what if she could see the pain that would come afterwards? What if she knew about the pain that each one of us have known, the pain of death of loved ones, and she could know that if I do this, that's what's going to happen. Because through her, every single death has come. And through Adam, they brought it into the world. And they knew that pain so well because what we just read in Genesis 4, that was their son. There was this moment, one piece of fruit. And when they ate it, years later, they felt the pain of having one son kill another. Death is the result of sin. And with it is just so much pain. And there is the pain of betrayal. There's the pain of violation. I wish I didn't know much about this. I really do, but I have had so much experience in talking to various people, and it's something that we don't talk about much in the church, and we kind of keep secret to some degree in society, and our society isn't even the worst society, but the idea of abuse and rape is so frequent, and it causes so much pain, and it's a sin unlike many other sins because it just causes a lasting pain. And many people endure this pain, and nobody else around them knows it, but it's a constant thing for them. And that's what sin does. The sin of separation, going back to death and other types of separation where family is no longer around. Then there's the sin the pain that the sin is causing, and it's not even necessarily the person who's sinning. It's the pain of enforcement. Of here we have rules, we have consequences, and somebody has to enact it. Did your parents ever tell you this as they laid you over their knee and they were getting ready to make you feel pain for something you've done wrong when they say, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you? And then you became parents and found out that was true? There's pain in enforcing laws against sinful people, against people who are rebelling against God. And so Paul talks about the way he wrote 1 Corinthians, and there's so many sinful people in the church at Corinth, so many problems. He has to correct it, but he doesn't just find great joy in it. Instead, he says in verse 4 of 2 Corinthians 2, "For out of much affliction and anguish of heart, I wrote to you with many tears, not so that you would be made sorrowful, but that you might know the love with which I have especially for you." And then again in chapter 7 in verse 8, he again talks about that letter. He says, "For though I caused you sorrow by my letter, I do not regret it, though I did regret it." He regretted having to deal with them. He regretted having to confront them. And I know that we are that way. We despise confrontation. Why do we have to have confrontation? Why must we rebuke? And the answer is simply because there is sin. Sin causes pain. Pain of enforcement, the pain of opposition. Paul talks about how preachers have to be prepared to be opposed, and we have to be gentle. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24 says, "The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, able to teach, patient when wronged, with gentleness correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance leading to the knowledge of the truth." It's unfortunate, but you know, it hurts when people disagree with us, when people reject the truth, and because we're holding on to the truth or teaching the truth, they're rejecting us. You remember in the Old Testament how Samuel felt? How Samuel felt when they said, "Give us a king." They were rejecting God. It hurt him. Sin hurts. It's the pain of opposition. And then it's just the pain of loss. And Proverbs, it talks about the violent people and not to run along with the violent people. It's actually the verses immediately following that that catch my attention in this case. Proverbs 1, previous was the section he was talking about this violence. He's concluding in verse 18, "They lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors." It takes. Sin always offers. It's a temptation to say, "I will give you this. I will give you pleasure. I will give you wisdom. I will give you knowledge. I will give you greatness." All these things that it promises to give us. But in the end, what sin does is it takes, takes, takes. Loss, loss, loss. How many people have you known that because they were caught up in sins, lost their jobs and lost security? Perhaps they've lost their freedom. They lost their family. They lost control. That's the loss of self. It's no longer me who's in control, but now I am addicted to this sin and I cannot stop. Sin takes over you and you lose you. Or the loss of peace. But it is loss after loss after loss. Sin is pain. And it is awful. Now, I can't remember who it was in the last few weeks that's been talking about heaven. It seems to me that it was Melvin Curry talking last week. It might have been something Rod was mentioning on Wednesday night. I don't remember exactly who. But we were talking about whether we really yearn for heaven the way they did in the Bible in the first century times. They just longed for heaven. Do you struggle with that? I think many of us do, and there's a very obvious reason. It's because this life's pretty good. We've got things pretty well. We have food in our refrigerators. We're not suffering. We can spend our time focused on entertainment because we're not just struggling to survive. Life's pretty good. And what happens is when life is pretty good, people lose track of a desire for heaven. You go to some of these other places where life is miserable and it's easy for them to dream about heaven. And they're always thinking about heaven because they're always trying to find strength to get through the next day. That's not us. You know why it's not us? It's not because we have all this pleasurable stuff. It's because we've managed to ignore what's wrong with the world. There's these commercials that come on TV. I know you know them if you watch any TV at all. The commercials that show people that are on the other side of the world, and there's these malnutritioned kids. You've seen those commercials where they're asking for donations because your little bit of money can help feed this little child. I don't like the way those commercials make me feel. You know what I do? Change the channel. I don't watch TV to be depressed. I don't watch TV to know about the world's problems. I'm trying to get away for a little bit. I want a little bit of entertainment. That's not entertainment. I change the channel. And now I'm ignoring the problems of the world and I'm entertained and life is good. You having problems focusing on heaven? Take a little bit of time to focus on sin. It is all around you, and it is all pain, and it is constant, and it'll make us wish for heaven. Our world today is not all that different than Sodom and Gomorrah, is it? I mean, some of the exact same problems that Lot was facing are what we are having pounded against us every day. And what did it say? This righteous man's soul was vexed day by day as he saw this sinful stuff going on. You're happy in this life. Take a little bit of time to think about sin and think about the pain that is caused by all the people around you. And that's not really the point of this lesson. Isn't really just, well, sin is bad. I think you probably knew that. I think you probably knew that sin is pain, but you're probably a little bit like me, and you're a little stubborn, and you want to overcome it. And what I want to do is I want to avoid the pain of sin. I don't want to go through these things. I see what people are going through, and I want to help. I want to take that away. Now, what's already been done is done, and there's a lot that I cannot do, a lot I cannot take away, but I'm looking at it saying, I don't want to be the cause of that pain for others. I don't want to endure that pain anymore. So what can I do to avoid it in the future? This first point is going to just completely shock you. You want to know how to avoid the pain of sin? Don't sin. You see what people are going through, and they go through all of this because of sin. Learn the lesson. Don't do what they did. We talked a few weeks ago about Ponzi schemes. It's a financial way of stealing people's money, essentially. And what it is, it says, you give me your money, and then you pretend to give them money back, but ultimately you're keeping the money, and they're going to lose all their money. People don't enter into Ponzi schemes if they know it's a Ponzi scheme. Somebody went up to Rob and said, Rob, I've got a Ponzi scheme I'd like you to invest in. You think he's going to do it? Would you? But we are so cold-hearted, so foolish. That's exactly what we do with sin. We see the pain that sin causes, sometimes the exact same sin, and we'll go commit it. We see what happens with, it's not like it's some secret that if you get involved with drugs, your life just absolutely falls apart. It's not like that's some secret, and yet what happens? Drugs is still increasing. People are still going after it. They see what it causes, they see the pain, and they manage to ignore it and follow it after it anyway. Well, here it is. You want to avoid the pain. It's a real simple concept. Don't sin. Jesus says in John chapter 5, there was this man who had been a paralytic, and Jesus healed him. But then what Jesus said to him in verse 14, afterward Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, behold, you have become well. Do not sin anymore, so that nothing worse happens to you. Don't sin and avoid the consequences of sin. It's brilliant. If only it was that simple, but that's where I'm yelling at myself in the mirror. Jared, don't do it. You see what this causes. You see the pain. Don't do it. Over and over and over again. And what will help you with not sinning is indeed to spend some time hating it. Hate, despise sin. Do you think that Eve and Adam ever looked back at that fruit longingly? Oh, I wish I could taste that again. If there is anything they would long that they could go back at that moment and change everything. Don't look at sin and look at the pleasure and look at the promises of joy and gifts. Hate it for its pain. In Exodus chapter 18, as God is looking for people to come meet him, he gives some qualifications, and one of them is Exodus 18, verse 21, "Furthermore, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain. And you shall place these over them as leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens." So here he's selecting these men to be leaders, and he's saying they need to be the men who hate dishonest gain. That means if you give them money and they shouldn't have it, they hate it. You know many people like that? Most people, they get some money, they'll be happy to kind of turn a blind eye as to how they actually got it. But we're supposed to hate it. So we go over to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 17, and he tells us not to look at the people of the world with envy. "Do not let your heart envy sinners, but live in the fear of the Lord always." It's like life is kind of like Facebook. On Facebook, you see all of the great things that people are going through. They boast and they brag about where they're going and all this stuff that's happy. And you don't realize that behind the scenes, they're miserable. And so people are getting miserable because they're watching Facebook thinking everybody's happy when everybody's actually miserable. And it is just a cascading thing where people are miserable. Don't yearn for their life that looks so great. They've got so much money. They've got it all figured out. Things are going great for them. Watch a beer commercial. They never show reality in beer commercials. They don't show how people are miserable and trying to drown away their sorrows. They don't show where people are having a complete loss of their life and they're not able to drive and they lose their job and they lose all of those things. No, they show them happy and surrounded by women. Don't look at that. You'll want that. You look at the pain behind it, the truth behind it, and hate sin. Funny that I mention alcohol, because here we are in Proverbs 23, verse 17, and it talks about not being envious of sinners, but look at what goes on at the end of the chapter, 31. "Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things and your mind will utter perverse things. And you will be like one who lies down in the middle of the sea or like one who lies down on top of a mast. They struck me, but I did not become ill. They beat me, but I did not know it. When shall I awake? I will seek another drink." He says, don't look at that joy. Don't look at that red bubbles. Look at the pain. And you find somebody who is getting beaten up and is trapped, stuck to go back. See things for what they really are and hate sin. And don't be around sin. Now notice I did not say don't be around sinners. Paul argues in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 that if you do that, we'd have to leave the world. We'd just have to leave the world. I'm not saying that. But we probably shouldn't be around sin. You want to avoid the pain of sin, don't be anywhere near sin. If you really enjoy pain, marry a sinner. Marry someone who embraces and loves sin and your life will know sin. You want to enjoy sin? You want to enjoy the pain? Go be friends, really close friends, with somebody who doesn't care about righteousness and who loves sin. And as their life falls apart, guess what they always do? They take you with them. Surround yourself by those who are going to be in pain because of their actions, and you will enjoy their pain with them, if that's really what you want. We're told that sin spreads. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 6. He talks about this sin that seems so hideous in the church that, oh, sure, nobody else would do this. Even the people of the world wouldn't do this. sleeping with your stepmother. There, nobody does that. But then he says in verse 6, your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough? What's he saying? Don't you understand? Sin spreads. You want to avoid the pain of sin? You want to avoid sinning? Don't embrace the sin of others. Don't spend the time with them when they're doing things that are sinful. Don't be involved in those things. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. Do not be deceived. Evil companions corrupt good morals. In Proverbs 1 and verse 10, that passage about those violent people says, when they come to you, when they're inviting you, do not consent. We had a different saying for that back in the 80s when I was growing up, and that was just say no. When somebody's inviting you to be a part of their sinful behavior, you just say no. Do not consent. But it's not always up to us, is it? Sometimes we've done nothing wrong and we have a world of pain brought upon us because of other people's sin. And sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. And what we can do, though, is we can look to God in those times. In James chapter 5, you know, there's a part of this that's it's language that's a little hard for us. But think about it from the perspective of who he's talking to, and maybe you can help understand it a little bit. He's going to start off in the first 6 verses, and he's talking about these people that are causing pain, unrighteous individuals. And he is warning them, saying that your unrighteous ways is going to lead to pain. The pain you are causing is the pain you will feel. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted, and their rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you have stored up your treasure. Behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you cries out against you, and the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. You have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your carts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and put to death the righteous man. He does not resist you. So here he's talking about the rich people that are doing these wicked things, but behind the scenes are the people that are suffering. The people that are in verse 6 that have been condemned and have been put to death and they're righteous. The people that aren't fighting back. And he turns to them in verse 7, therefore be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains. You too be patient, strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. And that's the challenging part right there, because it was written nearly 2,000 years ago, and he says that the Lord is near, that coming is near. That's not always talking about the second coming. For them, it is this idea of you are receiving injustice, justice will come. You are receiving punishment and pain, comfort will come. And it doesn't have to be the second coming of Christ. It can just be when they die. When Lazarus and the rich man, Lazarus spent his life in misery, absolute misery. And he dies, and what it says is then he spends his eternity in comfort, comforted in the bosom of Father Abraham. Look to God, because your pain will come to an end. Jesus will fix it. And it's not far off. So you get up the next day. No matter the pain that you're causing and no matter your innocence, you get up the next day and you live. And you look. And you wait. And it's coming. So, do you hate sin? I sure hope you do. But if you hate sin, I have a solution for you, and that is embrace Jesus. Because as much as you hate sin, he hates it more. You have experienced the pain of your life. Jesus is eternal. God is eternal. And he has experienced the pain a lot longer than that. A lot longer than yours life and my life. He has experienced not just the pain that's all around you, but he's experienced the pain that is all around the world today and forever. And it bothers him so much. He is so aggravated and so hurt by the things that we do that in the Bible, in Genesis chapter 6, mankind got bad and he looked at it and he says, I regret making you. And it's not like they were doing some super spiffy special type of sin in comparison to us. They were doing our kind of sins. That's the way we hurt God. You think you hate sin? God hates it more. Join him. Because Daniel chapter 9 is a prophecy, and it's an amazing prophecy. It really is. It's this prophecy that is what was to come. And when this prophecy is made, it talks about a temple. There was no temple. It had been destroyed. Here's the prophecy saying the temple's going to be rebuilt. God has a plan. He even tells them how long it's going to be. And it's fascinating to figure out. If you start doing the calculations, I don't normally recommend that with doing calculations for prophecies. This one actually isn't that bad because he's clearly trying to tell us how long it is going to be. It comes up right about the time when Jesus comes on earth. And what he says here in Daniel 9, verse 24, 70 weeks, that's 77s is literally what it says, have been decreed for your people and your holy city. Here's what's going to happen then. And this is when Jesus comes. To finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. And so Jesus' sacrifice, Jesus' life on earth, it had this mission, and that is to end sin. If you hate sin and the pain it has caused you, if you desire not to cause it to anyone else, if you desire to never feel that pain again, embrace Jesus and his work. His blood will wash away your sin. 1 John chapter 1, verse 7, all unrighteousness, all the wickedness you've committed can be washed away by his blood. His teachings can guide us away from sin. In John chapter 8 and verse 12, Jesus talks about the fact that he is the light in a dark world. He says, Jesus spoke again to them saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life. Jesus sets this path, this plan in front of us that reveals sin, that says, this is right, this is what's wrong, follow this. You hate sin, follow Jesus, he'll help you avoid it. If you hate sin, follow Jesus, his path leads to God. And with God, there is no sin. I look forward to heaven. Because in heaven, there the loved ones that have gone on before, who have been faithful to God, will be. I look forward to heaven because there God will be. But if God is there, that means something else. And I look forward to this. As I watch people suffer, and I fear causing suffering, and I have caused suffering, and I've endured suffering. As I think about those things, what a joy it is to think of a heaven in which there is no sin ever again. No sin. So, Jared, don't sin this week. Don't be around sin and hate it. I used to talk to myself in third person, not because I'm arrogant, but because I talk to myself, and I have to call me something. But this lesson's not just for me, is it? It's for you too. We're all in the same position, and I think we've all felt the pain of sin, and I hope that you will take a path this week that makes the world a better place, that makes you a better person, that makes you more pleasing to God. As we wait for that ultimate day when we spend an eternity with God in heaven away from sin and its consequences. If you're not a Christian, you have embraced sin and the pain that comes with it, and we beg you to change to a better way, to follow Jesus who came to put an end to sin, to embrace his sacrifice. If you believe in Jesus, why not repent of your sins and be baptized into him for the forgiveness of your sins? Washed away. If you're a Christian and you've fallen away, come back, won't you? As we stand and as we sing. There's a fountain preached for you.